Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation, and it shall be a statute forever in your generations. The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, The Courage of Alfred Mordecai, was written by Mark Siegel. There are many kinds of courage in the world. There's the courage of the explorer who scales the mountain peaks or penetrates the wilderness in a search for the unknown. There's the courage of the man who faces adversity or affliction without complaint. There's the courage of men in battle and men against the elements. But there's a courage which, in its own way, is more demanding than any of these. It's the courage of a man to be himself. This is the story of the courage of Alfred Mordecai, a soldier by profession. You will find his name in the military history books, an honored name. But the field on which he fought his greatest battle was a silent battlefield, a lonely battlefield in which no drums beat and no man marched except himself. The road that would lead him to that battlefield was chosen in the spring of the year 1819 in the sleepy North Carolina town of Warrenton.
Now, the second person plural of the pluperfect Alfred.
A man and his son in a pleasant garden, and the classic accents of Latin mingling with the song of the Carolina mockingbird.
The pluperfect father? Manueratus, you had advised.
Good, Alfred. Now the future perfect.
Manueratus, you shall have advised.
Fine. Alfred.
Yes, father?
What of the future perfect, or the perfect future? Have you come to any decision?
Well, I've been thinking of it, Father. You would like me to attend the university here in North Carolina, wouldn't you?
Only if you feel that would suit you, Alfred.
You're better qualified to know what would suit me, I think, Father, than I am.
Perhaps better qualified to advise, Alfred. But not better qualified to decide which college or university you should attend.
I'm not certain I understand the difference, Father.
The difference? The greatest difference in the world. A man, any man, must follow his own inner needs if he's to fulfill himself. You're 16 now. It's time that you begin to find out for yourself who you are. No one can make that voyage of exploration for any other man. Not even for his son.
You can prepare a man, even your son, with the equipment for a voyage of self-discovery. You can teach him Latin and Greek and Hebrew, as Jacob Mordecai, the founder of a well-known college for young women, had taught his son. You can rear your son in the traditions of his ancient faith, providing a guide for his moral development. But if you prepare him with wisdom, you will teach him also to make his own decisions.
I've decided, Father. You asked me to let you know.
Excellent, Alfred. Now, which is it to be, the University of North Carolina?
I think not, Father.
Ah, you've decided to go north to Harvard College.
To go north, Father, but not to Harvard.
Well, I had rather thought we had narrowed the choice to one or the other.
I've given it much thought, Father. If you will consent, I will enter my application at West Point.
At West Point? At the military academy?
If you will consent, sir.
You wish to become an officer? It's an honorable profession.
It is not so much the profession I desire, Father, but the academy is the only scientific school in the country. The only school where I can learn to do what I believe I really want to do.
And what do you really want to do, Alfred?
To build things, Father. To become an engineer.
Army officers are not limited in their function to construction, Alfred. From time to time, quite the other way around.
I understand that, Father.
And you're sure that this is the choice you would make?
If you approve.
I could not approve it for myself, Alfred.
I know that, Father.
But I am not you. You are not I. It is what our faith teaches. Each man is unique.
Then you will allow me to go?
Of course. Suum quique. To every one his own.
Alfred Mordecai, son of Jacob Mordecai, educator, grandson of Moses Mordecai, merchant, marched the parade grounds atop the gray rock that is West Point for 4 long years. The rhythms of regimentation echoed in his ears. He learned what an army officer must learn, to dress uniformly, to speak uniformly, to present in every precise outer detail an appearance of sameness, an appearance of conformity. But never in the 4 long years did he forget the Talmudic concept of the uniqueness of each man.
A man strikes many coins from one die, and they are all alike. The Holy One, blessed be He, however, strikes every person from the die of the first man, but no one resembles another.
Company!
In the year 1823, Alfred Mordecai was commissioned as a second lieutenant in the Army of the United States.
Lieutenant Mordecai reporting as directed, sir.
At ease, Lieutenant. Be seated, Mordecai.
Thank you, sir.
Lieutenant, as Commandant of the Academy, I am expected to make a recommendation as to the assignment of each graduating cadet.
I see, sir.
In your case, Lieutenant, I find myself in a dilemma.
Sir, may I know what reason?
A delightful reason, Mordecai. You've graduated first in your class. And your record appears equally brilliant in every branch of study. I'm hard put to know where to send you.
Then don't send me anywhere, sir.
How's that, Lieutenant?
If I could teach science and engineering at the point, sir.
There's no advancement in it, Mordecai, I warn you.
I have time for that, sir. I expect to be in the Army for a long time.
That's a good answer, Lieutenant. We'd be proud to have you stay on to teach at the point.
For several years, Alfred Mordecai taught the natural sciences and engineering at West Point. He was a professor in uniform, a scientist called Lieutenant Mordecai. Though he was strikingly military in his bearing, he was strikingly unmilitary in his thinking. He would tell a class of engineers,
"Gentlemen, the mission of the military engineer is facilitating the movement of friendly forces and impeding the movement of enemy forces by construction and demolition. You may count on my teaching you what I know of the building of bridges, roads, canals. As for demolition, I have no doubt there is some other instructor who will be glad to oblige."
There was. His name, however, is not recorded
in the history books.
For the first 9 years of his military career, Alfred Mordecai served in the Corps of Engineers. He taught. He supervised the building of Fort Monroe and Fort Calhoun on the Virginia coast. He conducted a canal survey. He was, by all reports, happy in what he considered constructive work. Then, in the year 1832, Lieutenant Mordecai was summoned to the War Department in Washington.
"Ordnance, sir? But I'm an engineering officer."
"A very creative engineering officer, Lieutenant, as far as I can see."
"Well, I appreciate the comment, sir, but my specialization is construction, not cannon and gunpowder."
"Well, they tell me you are something of a scientist, Lieutenant."
"I consider myself one, General."
"We have need of scientists in the Ordnance Department. A sufficient need, I should add, so that a promotion to a captaincy would be immediately forthcoming."
"The promotion is secondary in my thinking, General."
"Oh? And what is primary, Lieutenant?"
that I should serve my country in my most effective capacity, General.
By your lights, Mordecai, or in the considered judgment of the United States Army?
Preferably by both, sir.
Lieutenant, if your bravery in the field is matched by your independence in this office...
Yes, sir.
I pity the enemy you face, I sincerely do.
The dates and details are precisely noted in official orders. On May 30th, 1832, Lieutenant Mordecai became Captain Mordecai.
To the rear! Hutch!
In the year 1833, Captain Mordecai commanded the Washington Arsenal.
To the rear! Hutch!
In the year 1836, he was placed in command of the Frankfurt Arsenal near Philadelphia.
Company!
It was in Philadelphia that he met Sarah Ann Hayes, courted her, and married her. And, as so often happens in young love, in getting to know Sarah Ann, he deepened his understanding of himself.
Alfred.
Yes, Sarah Ann?
Sometimes it seems so strange to me that you should be an army officer.
It does.
I mean, you're a quiet man, a peace-loving man.
I hope I am.
And a religious man, Alfred. It seems to me those things don't go together with the military life.
At the beginning, I wondered about that myself, Sarah.
You did?
But I've come to love the military life. And to understand that it isn't so much the profession a man follows as what he does within that profession. The Army's where I belong.
Still, it seems unusual for one of our faith, Alfred.
That question's arisen from time to time, too.
And what do you say when it does?
I say that some of my ancestors were very distinguished soldiers indeed.
They were? You never told me that, Alfred.
Well, I didn't think I had to, Sarah. You should know.
Why should I?
Because you read your Bible on Saturdays. I'll name just two. Joshua and King David.
Alfred.
Yes, Sarah Ann?
I've been thinking, it's all very well for you to build things in the Army and to study scientific matters, but...
But what, my dear?
But what if there should be a war? What would you do then?
What would I do then? I would do what I've always done, Sarah Ann. I would do what I think right. I would do my duty.
All in the military orders.
1842. By order of the Secretary of War, Captain Alfred Mordecai will assume the post of Assistant Inspector of Arsenals.
1844. Captain Mordecai will assume command of the Washington Arsenal.
It is all part of military history. When the war against Mexico came, Sarah Ann's question as to what her husband would do in the event of war was answered, too, in the crisp language of the military order.
30 May, 1848. For meritorious service in the war against Mexico, Captain Alfred Mordecai is herewith brevetted as a major in the Army of the United States.
Major Mordecai continued to advance in his chosen field. Eventually was named assistant to the Secretary of War. Yet, each step led him forward also toward a test of courage more difficult to face than the smoke-filled battlefield, more difficult to avoid than the direct onslaught of charging cavalry. In early 1861, Major Alfred Mordecai was summoned to the War Department in Washington, D.C.
I will be direct, Major. What is your position on slavery?
I do not condone it, General.
And on secession?
I see no future for a divided nation.
I am glad to hear it, Mordecai. These are difficult times for officers of Southern birth.
They are, sir.
And we will count on you for a position of responsibility, Mordecai. Of greater responsibility, I should say.
I appreciate your confidence, General. However...
However what, Major?
I ask you, sir, to defer any promotion.
What's that? What's that?
I must consult further, sir.
Consult? Consult with whom, may I ask? Is your wife a Southerner?
She is a Philadelphian, General. I must consult further with myself.
Spring came gently to Washington that year. In Richmond, 100 miles to the south, representatives of the slaveholding states convened to consider secession. And between the two cities, not yet quite at war, emissaries traveled freely, preparing for the conflict that was to come.
Sarah, I've had a visitor.
What kind of visitor, Alfred?
Gentleman from Richmond.
It has come to that?
It has. It asked me to be a general in the Army of the Confederacy.
What did you say?
I told him I had served the United States faithfully for more than 40 years, and that I hope for the preservation of the Union. I told him also that I have a son who will graduate from West Point this year.
There are moments in a man's life when the forces of the world in which he lives converge upon him, demanding a courage which transcends the courage of the mountain climber or the explorer. In April of 1861, Alfred Mordecai, Major of the Army of the United States, was thrust upon a battlefield, a lonely battlefield in which no drums beat and no man marched except himself.
You sent for me, Father?
Sit down, sir. I am about to do something. I wish to tell you first.
What is it, Father?
You may not understand this. You'll be graduating from the Point in June. I assume you are prepared to take up arms for the Union when you receive your commission.
Of course, Father.
For that alone, son, I owe it to you to tell you first. I am resigning from the Army.
Cadet Mordecai, 1 month from his lieutenant's commission, 1 month from combat service in the Army of the Potomac, looked at the face of his father, Major Alfred Mordecai, and asked an obvious and painful question.
Father, you will fight with them?
Do you think I would fight in an army against you?
I don't know. I don't know anymore what to think and what not to think.
I will fight with neither army.
And you wish me to resign also?
I wish you to do what you think right.
But if you came to this decision, Father, with all your years of service and devotion...
I will tell you what my father once told me. I am not you and you are not I. It is what our faith teaches. Each man is unique.
Well, Father, they will call you a coward.
Do you think it is easy what I'm doing?
No, it's not. But the world...
I am concerned with my reputation. Every man is. I am more concerned with being faithful to myself.
It's a luxury. The country is torn in half. Are you for the Union or against it?
I am loyal to the Union, son. You know that.
Well, it's a strange kind of loyalty, Father.
You will learn that each man has many loyalties. I will not fight against my family in the South, and I will not make war against the government I love.
They could assign you to a non-combat duty, Father.
They could. But I will not make war upon myself either. I do not ask you to do what I do. I ask you only to understand. All my life I have served my faith and my country. But there is no true service to others unless there is service to that God-given part of man which is his self.
They will call you a coward, Father.
Let them call me what they will. What is most important to me is what I call myself.
Alfred, no one understands what you have done. No one.
Are you telling me that you do not understand either, Sarah?
I've tried. I've tried so hard.
But you do not understand.
I do not understand why you became a soldier in the first place.
It was the profession that would allow me to make a contribution to society, Sarah.
And now, by withdrawing, Alfred, by fighting on neither side, what contribution will you make now?
The greatest contribution I can make.
By doing nothing, Alfred.
By doing nothing? Do you think it is doing nothing for me to discard a career of 40 years? Do you think it is doing nothing to expose myself to charges of cowardice, to face poverty? To stand on the sidelines and watch my son fight with the North and my brothers fight with the South?
Alfred, Alfred, my dear, I know you are in pain. I know you've chosen a path of anguish and of hardship. But I still do not know why you have chosen it.
I will try to tell you, Sarah. I will try. Throughout our lives, we must make choices. Most men choose the lesser evil. For me, that's not enough. I have been taught to choose the greatest good.
Even if it means you stand alone, Alfred. Isolated and alone.
Sarah, no one stands alone, not really. Yet everyone stands alone. What is required of us? To do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with our God. And how shall we know what it is to do justly? We know because the Almighty made us in His own image. God did not make nations in His own image. He did not make the North in His own image or the South in His own image. He made each man in His own image. And each man, no matter what any other man may think, each man must look to himself, to his own belief, to his own integrity, if he is to join the perfection of God's world.
For the long years of civil war, Alfred Mordecai lived in poverty. At the age of 61, he began life anew as a civil engineer. It would be 20 years before the passions of civil war would cool, and Alfred Mordecai, an honored graduate of West Point, would preside at a meeting of the alumni of the Military Academy.
We must march forward together toward the greatest good. Yet we must remember that no man, even a man in uniform, is the same as the man to his right or the man to his left.
An old man, speaking at the Military Academy of the United States.
Each man carries the divine fire of individuality. Each man must be true to himself, no matter how difficult, no matter the cost. Only if he is true to himself can he, in the end, be true to his nation, to his world, and to his faith.
There are many kinds of courage in the world, but there is a courage which, in its own way, is more demanding than the courage of men in battle or men against the elements. It is the courage of a man to be himself. It is 100 years since Alfred Mordecai, now an honored name in military history, stood alone and firm in his belief. Yet somehow, the courage of Alfred Mordecai after a full century is vibrant and alive. It is a story for all places and all times, including yours and mine. If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting the Honorable Samuel Rabin, Justice of the Supreme Court of the State of New York. Judge Rabin.
Every phase of life in America felt the impact of the war between the states. So much so that even today, nearly 100 years after the outbreak of hostilities, new books are being written about various aspects of that great struggle. All wars are bloody, tragic affairs, but there is none so brutal as that between brothers, no victory so empty as that over a brother, and no defeat so agonizing as that sustained at the hands of a brother. This tragic dilemma of civil war goes back to Cain and Abel, to Joseph and his brethren, and the narrative portion of the Pentateuch is to a large extent a saga of fraternal conflict. The dilemma that faced Alfred Mordecai in the difficult decision he made was not objection to war in the sense of a conscientious objector. He was torn between loyalty to the Union, which he served so well for many years, and loyalty to his relatives and friends in the South, where he was born. To have accepted from the South the high position of general would have meant ingratitude to the Union. To have fought for the Union would have meant abandoning his kin. What he did was more difficult than either. The courage of Alfred Mordecai exemplifies the agony of choice which accompanies integrity to one's commitments. In our daily lives, we make decisions constantly, not as judges of others, but as judges of ourselves. If after searching our souls, we reach the conclusion that what we do is just and right, we can ask for no more, and we can expect no more. The right to think as an individual, to act as an individual, to exercise the divine privilege of distinguishing right from wrong, a high concept of Judaism, has been woven into the framework of our form of government and distinguishes it from the totalitarian states where independent thought and action are anathema. May we ever maintain and honor the integrity of conscience which is exemplified in the spirit which seeks to understand the minds of others, which views interests alongside its own without bias, and where least is heard and considered side by side with the greatest. That was what the venerable jurist, learned hand, had in mind when he said, "The spirit of liberty is a spirit which is not too sure that it is right. The spirit of liberty is the spirit which seeks to understand the minds of other men and women."
Thank you, Judge Rabin. Our eternal light drama today, The Courage of Alfred Mordecai, was written by Mark Siegel. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in our cast were Leon Janney, Bill Lipton, Bernard Lenro, Ralph Bell, and Mitzi Gould. Your narrator was Norman Rose. This is Lionel Rico speaking. Our program is directed by Parker Gibbs. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.